Marshall, will you call the next case?
A220703, Catherine E. Jacobson versus Francesco Parisi.
Counsel, welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's December 1st, 2022. As you both probably know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your arguments, and counsel for appellant, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. In this post-pandemic or pandemic days, we do have microphones that are further apart, or you can use the one in the middle. I would note that if you use the podium in the middle, there is a clock on that which will remind you of your time, and that you can raise or lower the podium if that helps. I would ask you both to introduce yourself at the beginning of each of your marks, because we do tape these recordings and place them on our website. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joe Tamburino. I represent the petitioner, Catherine Jacobson. We're going to be asking this court to reverse the trial court's finding, the referee's finding, against my client on the issuance of the harassment restraining order. As we all know, the standard of review is abuse of discretion, meaning that the facts findings will not be changed or reversed unless they are clearly erroneous, not supported by the record. And in this case, that is in fact what has happened. Referee Reed, who was the trial court judge during both HRO proceedings, and just as a reminder, this case involved at the hearing Mr. Parisi, who is the respondent in this case, bringing in HRO against Ms. Jacobson, and then Ms. Jacobson, who's the petitioner in this case, bringing in HRO against Mr. Parisi. We are obviously not appealing.
Am I correct? There was one joint hearing on both petitions?
That's correct. What the judge did for judicial economy, and it made sense, was just had one hearing for both cases.
Thanks.
And we are not appealing the judge's findings in Mr. Parisi when he was the petitioner against our client. We're not appealing that. What we are appealing is the finding, the denial of our client's HRO as a petitioner against respondent Parisi. Referee Reed, who was the trial court judge in this case, made factual findings that were not supported by the record. They were clearly erroneous. We could go even to some factual findings that are obvious, such as in the referee's findings, he said that the parties were in close quarters during this interaction. That's simply not the case. As the video, which is voluminous in this matter, showed, this was an expansive bar. This was in a hotel lobby, the Ivy Hotel. There was a reception desk. There was a bar.
Tamburino, at some points in those videos, they were in close quarters, right?
They were close together, but not in close quarters. There were plenty of place to move around. You could see in the video that they were right in front of each other. That's correct. But you could also see in the video that the bar was 20 feet away. You could see sometimes there was a reception area. The bottom line is, the way it looked in the findings is if they were in some type of small room. That wasn't the case. It was an expansive room. But the most glaring example of a finding of fact that is not supported on the record is the situation where the referee said that Mr. Parisi, the respondent, was trying to defend himself. Now, we all know that we have a right to self-defense. If a person is in reasonable apprehension of fear that they're about to be attacked, presently about to be attacked, they can use physical force to thwart that attack. Absolutely true. But the referee made no findings after that because there are three other legal requirements that we have to go through an analysis with. The first being the duty to retreat. In Minnesota, that is an affirmative duty. You simply can't resort to force.
Can I stop you for a minute?
Yes.
Your argument is based on the premise that the criminal law concept of the defense of self-defense applies in an HRO, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Seems like that needs justification before we go forward and apply it.
Well, the reason for that, Your Honor, is under the HRO statute, 609-748, two issues. Number one is that's under our 609 code, which is our criminal code, 609-748. Number two is that in our HRO statute, it clearly says that an HRO can issue for one instance of physical assault. One instance. We have two here. So in this matter, when Mr. Parisi, the respondent, claimed that he was acting in self-defense, we have to go through the standard self-defense criminal analysis.
And did he, in his testimony or in arguments by his counsel, did he invoke the self-defense doctrine, or is that something that you brought up for the first time
in the
appellate arguments?
No, he did invoke it. His counsel, Mr. Braun, asked him, were you defending yourself? In fact, I actually objected to that.
I guess I'm talking about a legal doctrine, not so much his actions or descriptions of his actions. But I guess, did the respondent above, try to introduce that legal concept or urge the referee to make a finding of under the elements of the criminal law concept of self-defense?
Yes, because he said in his testimony on questioning by his counsel, I was trying to defend myself. She was hitting me. That also has no factual basis, but he said that. Mr. Parisi said, I was trying to defend myself. I was trying to defend my property. She was attacking me. She was hitting me. What he argued was that he was suffering from an actual criminal assault, so he had to stop that by using force. And before you can use force, you must obey the duty to retreat. He did not. He could have easily stepped away. He could have easily said to someone, remember, this is a hotel with security, a front desk. I need some assistance. I have this woman who's harassing me, or whatever it is. But he didn't. What he did was he picked up his phone, put it right in front of Ms. Jacobson's face, and started mocking her. And there was no retreat.
Can I follow up with a similar question, or maybe the reciprocal question? Did you make argument to the referee about duty to retreat and touching on other elements of the self-defense doctrine?
No, Your Honor, because the duty to retreat is inherent in our laws. So is the, before you can use self-defense, there is the duty to retreat. That's inherent in the laws. We said, our argument was there was no self-defense. This was a complete assault. When the judge was going through that analysis, the court should have said, well, within the self-defense doctrine, there is the duty to retreat. We have to go through who was the aggressor. We have to go through, was it reasonable force? Our argument was, it was not self-defense at all. It was completely an attack, a slap in the face, and a grabbing of the breast. And you could see, even with the factual finding of that he was acting in self-defense, he was part of the aggressive behavior. In fact, if you look at the transcripts, the court even found that his behavior was antagonizing and inappropriate. And at one time, there was testimony that the police who responded actually told the respondent to stop antagonizing her. But he didn't. He was the aggressor, and he kept putting the phone in her face, mocking her, saying, oh, yes, I rape women. That's what he was doing.
Isn't it true that the two particular moments reflecting the alleged physical assault and sexual assault, at those moments in time, she was walking toward him and he was backtracking? Is that fair to say?
Well, he wasn't really backtracking. She was walking toward him. He was right here with the phone. She was walking toward him, and that's when at one point he starts saying, hey, 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 and then as she's grabbing the phone, he slaps her in the face. And then she goes back, and then she tries to grab the phone again, and that's when the breast grab happens. That's correct. I mean, it's a very short period of time. That's why we put those two still photos from the videos in our responsive brief. And specifically with the issue of the reasonable use of force, the force in this case was unreasonable because, in fact, when someone is trying to grab your phone, you don't automatically resort to hitting them in the face. You can simply back up, ask for help. You can slap their hand. You can try to push their hand away.
Well, Mr. Marino, would you agree that the record would indicate your client was under the influence of alcohol during these events?
Absolutely. We admitted that at trial.
The problem I'm having with the argument is, and we've all watched the video, I guess speaking for myself, if someone's trying to take my phone away, I don't think I would go through in my mind, well, here are my options. I can walk backwards. I can say, don't take my phone. I can, you know, do all the things you're suggesting, but I'm not so sure I would agree with you that it was unreasonable for him, based on what I saw of the video, to do what he did, to stop her from, you know, taking his phone away. And yes, in a perfect world, should both of these people have left the bar? Yes, I think that's probably what should have happened, but, you know, it is what it is. So are you saying that if, by examining the video, no one could come up with the scenario that the district court found, which is she's going towards him, he's going back, he thinks he's going to take her phone, and he kind of, you know, whatever you want to put it, you know, slaps her away and then touches her breast. That's not an option.
No, it's not. Two parts to that, Your Honor. Here's the reason. When you're saying if someone's trying to take my phone, quite right. If all of a sudden you're on the street walking with your phone and some ne'er-do-weller comes up and tries to grab your phone, different scenario. In this case, because Mr. Parisi was part of the aggression, he put his phone at issue. He kept recording her. She kept saying, I don't want to be recorded. You do not have my permission.
Well, I mean, I think he was recording her because she was calling him a rapist. And presumably, he wanted to document that in case, you know, there's another lawsuit after this one.
That was his choice, though, Your Honor, and he kept recording and recording. He had that she was calling him a rapist very quickly in this case, but he kept recording and following her. And even if the court does find that the slap, and by the way, the slap wasn't just pushing away. If you watch the video, he's telling her no, 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 and then all of a sudden he reaches out his left hand and he just smacks her in the face. And then right after that, he grabs her breast. And there is no doubt this is a breast grab. His left hand grabs her left breast. Now, interestingly enough, when the respondent testified about the breast grab, and I would go specifically to page 13 and 14 of the transcripts, his attorney asks him, did she hit you, meaning Ms. Jacobson? Yes, that's what he says. That's how we get into the physical fight. Next, he asks, petitioner accuses you of cupping her breast. Do you recall that? And he says, not at all. Well, that's not true. He did cup the breast. And then his attorney asks him later on page 14, so if the video shows you cupping her breast, and then he answers quickly and said, I was running away from her. That's the last thing I would ever do to somebody in this situation in front of my girlfriend. He denied cupping her breast. Why did he deny that? Well, the consciousness of guilt. Obviously, he knew that he should not have grabbed a woman's breast without her permission. And Ms. Jacobson stated she in no way gave consent for the breast grab. Now, pushing someone away, pushing their arm, pushing their hand, even as you, Your Honor, has stated, maybe perhaps a slap, that's one thing. But actively reaching out and grabbing a woman's breast and not just pushing. It would be different if Mr. Parisi would have testified, I went, yes, it was my hand, I pushed out, my hand accidentally hit her breasts. But as the video shows, it is as clear as day, he reached out, grabbed, and squeezed her breast. And that's what Ms. Jacobson testified to. That is not reasonable force.
I have to say, I'm not convinced that the evidence supports everything you're saying. I mean, I think there's a lot of characterization in your statements. I mean, for example, cupping the breast. I don't see a cupping, what I would call cupping. It's also, it seems to me, I mean the contact is above the breast, or you know, perhaps between the breast and the chest. But I mean, the location seems to be significant, and to call it a breast grab, I'm not sure if I'm agree with that either. But I mean, these, and there are no findings on that. This was your evidence and your arguments, but there's no findings about breast grab, breast cupping, correct?
Well, the court, referee Reed, did state that he found that the respondent acted inappropriately. He just said that it didn't rise to the objectively unreasonable level. He said,
I think the inappropriateness had to do with his decision to record the event after there was a noted de-escalation. This was certainly inappropriate.
What?
Especially after petitioner asked him to stop.
Well, the findings in this case were not, I mean, there was only several paragraphs of finding, and the only thing that it said was that we did not meet the burden and that he could not identify any conduct by respondent that qualifies as objectively unreasonable. And the reason why we said cupping, Your Honor, is that was just the most description we could do because this was not a push, even though it was on the top of the breast. You could see that the forefinger and the thumb are opposed and there is a grabbing. Yes, if it was under, it would be more like a cupping that we would, you know, use in common parlance. But we said cupping because that's the way it was described with Ms. Jacobson.
Do the crim sec statutes require sexual intent to have a sexual assault?
Well, that's correct, yes. Crim sex, and what you're specifically referring to, Your Honor, is 609-3451, and that is the touching of someone's intimate parts without their permission, and that requires one of two things, either a sexual or an aggressive intent. We believe that both exist here, a sexual and an aggressive intent. But at a minimum, it was an aggressive intent because obviously they were in an altercation. I think that speaks for itself. But the criminal sexual statutes of Minnesota require either a sexual or aggressive intent. I see my time is up.
Maybe if I could ask one more question.
Mm-hmm.
And
Judge
so
Johnson.
Looking again at the district court's order at page 3, it seems to me that the key findings, I just want to see if you agree with me about the key findings, I think is that beginning on the third line where it says the court is unable to identify and so on, and stopping at the sixth line where it says incidental, seems to me that is those are the findings that are really at the core of the appeal. Would you agree with that?
Correct. Yes.
That's all. That's my only question, just because that's what I'm focused on, and I just want to make sure that...
And that's part of our argument, that is an incorrect finding. This was an intentional act, not an incidental act.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Tamburino. Counsel for respondent, we'll turn to you.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the court. My name is John Braun, spelled B-R-A-U-N. I am counsel for Francesco Parisi, who is the appellee in this case. You've clearly viewed the videos, you've clearly reviewed the transcript. We're faced now with that word that keeps popping up in the law, reasonable. That wobbly column upon which is perched this whole enterprise of the civil law. And make no mistake, this falls within the rubric of the civil law, not of the criminal law, despite where it might appear in the statute. So what is reasonable? Well, it's important here because Ms. Jacobson contends that Mr. Parisi's incidental contact with her was unreasonable. And unreasonable is where we need to look based on Dunham v. Rohr, which is the controlling case here, which calls for in an HRO, a finding that the conduct of the respondent is objectively unreasonable. You can't get to reasonable without context. Can't get to reasonable without viewing the humanity and the circumstances and the environment in which some contact took place. And in this case, Mr. Parisi was, in fact, filming an altercation. He submitted to the court, and the court viewed four videos taken over a period of about 34 minutes on that evening. He was filming, holding the phone in his right hand, and in much of the video, he is fending off an approach, an attack by Jacobson with his left hand. And at the germane moments, which are referred to by my colleague and in Ms. Jacobson's pleadings, he is in full reverse run retreat. And if you watch that happening on the video, I don't know how fast any of you can run backwards or I can run backwards, but he's running backwards. And she is running towards him. He is holding the phone with his right hand. He is fending her off. Now, does this need to satisfy all of the requirements for a criminal defense? It doesn't. It only needs to be reasonable. reasonable under the circumstances. Well, what had happened to Mr. Parisi already that night? He had been defamed. At least 24 times he was called a rapist in the lobby of his own home. He'd moved into that home a week before. He had been hit in the face as she tried to take the phone from him. You can see in the video, she forces his phone into his face in an attempt to try to take it from him. The video ends at that point. She had threatened him, and I'm going to use her words here, and I apologize. She said, "I'm going to fuck you up." She had assaulted him. And as a matter of law, she had harassed him. The court found and issued for, in Mr. Parisi's favor, a harassment restraining order based on her activity. So at the moment that these two incidental contacts took place, he was being threatened, harassed, assaulted, and defamed, and chased around a hotel lobby, running in reverse. Mr. Tamburino is incorrect that he did not seek help. You can hear him on the video at the moment of the would-be best breast grab, the incidental contact, saying, "I'm being assaulted. Call the police. I'm being assaulted," to the hotel staff to try to get some help.
Mr. Braun, what do you think of Mr. Tamburino's argument on the duty to retreat issue? I mean, one option for your client was to have, you know, left the bar, go up on the elevator, and go back to his condo, and then, I don't know, report her to the condo board or you know, or whatever. I mean, he could have done that, right?
He could have done that.
He chose to stay there and kept filming, which, you know, clearly revved her up. And then we get to, you know, she goes, you know, towards him with the phone, and he does what he does, and then, you know, off to the races. Why didn't he have a duty to act reasonably, which is, you know, don't pick a fight with a drunk in a bar. Go home. Leave the bar. I mean, it's not like this is the only bar in Minneapolis downtown near the Ivy.
With all due respect, Your Honor, he didn't pick a fight with a drunk in a bar. A bar and a drunk picked a fight with him and said some...
Fair enough.
Absolutely.
Well, then don't take the bait. Leave.
When somebody is calling you a rapist in the lobby of your own home, perhaps in Gandhi might have been able to retreat in those circumstances, might have said, okay, things come out of people's mouths, that's too bad. In my opinion, most people suffering that kind of attack, number one, want to make a record of it, and we live in a world where we have a video recorder in our pocket at every turn, and God knows Minnesota has shown the world what happens when you have that kind of technology available to you and can record the harm that's being done to you. I think we need to encourage people to do that, to make that record. This continues to happen throughout the evening. Like I said, this is a period of just over a half an hour where he's taking these videos as this escalates. At one point, he does call her partner and requests that he come down and get her because he knows her partner who lives in the building, which eventually he does do. And you can see that in the video as he comes down and escorts her away. And I think he made efforts to de-escalate this. He said, "You need to go home." Right at the beginning of being in the first film, he says, "I think you need to go home." So it's not as though he's poking and prodding her. You do hear him saying, I'm a rapist. English is not his first language. He's trying very hard to make a cognizable record of the contours of this attack because it's not the first time he's suffered this kind of thing. And in fact, the source of this accusations were a fairly high profile case several years ago that he was involved in. So this is a painful wound to be picking at to begin with.
So Mr. Braun, if I may, and I understand what you're saying about this isn't a criminal law, matter, but given, as Judge Conley pointed out, the ability your client had to just leave and walk away, you know, how doesn't that inform the way we look at this finding, any contact initiated by the respondent was incidental. I mean, when he could have just left, he didn't. He stayed. How is it then incidental when he brushes against her, however you want to characterize that?
He brushes against her when she's chasing him. Now, if you're running backwards holding your phone, where was he supposed to go? I mean, is the idea that
elevator up to his condo?
Like I say, in a perfect world, perhaps that's where she should have gone too, right? And as the first moving party to turn this from an evening of dinner and drinks into an ugly altercation, the person who had the duty to get out of there was Catherine Jacobson. Could he have bid everybody a good night and gone up to his condo? Yeah, that's what eventually happened after he made a record of the abuse that he suffered. Everybody went on. It didn't go on for hours. It didn't escalate into a shooting or a fist fight. That's what eventually happened. But Mr. Parisi needed to make a sufficient record of the kind of harm he was suffering, and in his judgment, that's what it was required to make that record.
Mr. Braun, do you interpret the district court's order to have some sort of implied finding that there was an assault?
I do not.
What did the district court, can you explain, tell us your interpretation of the district court's order?
And are you referring to the order in the case in which Mr. Parisi was the petitioner for an HRO or the order that's properly under appeal?
The latter, the order on appeal.
The latter. So my reading of that order simply says this wasn't a perfect situation. Everybody could have acted, including my client, could have acted in a more genteel fashion. I think that's undisputed. But that what Mr. Parisi did and was forced to do in this situation is not objectively unreasonable.
So you would agree maybe that there's no finding one way or the other as to whether there was either a physical assault or a sexual assault?
I don't see that there was a finding in either case. And I don't think that that's what was before the court. What was before the court was a harassment restraining order.
But the definition of harassment can be accomplished through an assault, right, under the statute?
Yes. It's not necessarily an assault. It's a single incident of physical abuse or sexual abuse. Or multiple incidents of unwanted contact, but the case law says that this turns upon this being objectively unreasonable. So
right. Ordinarily, I mean, I think both the district courts, and to the extent that they do a legal analysis, and appellate courts, consider the conduct described in the statute first, and then the reasonableness criteria of Dunham after that. It seems like here the district courts, the referee skipped to that second part without making thorough findings on the first part.
If you need both A and B to make C, Your Honor, and you're missing B, you never get to C. So if that's how the court approached that and found one element to be deficient, there isn't a need to address the second.
Am I correct? Was the standard of proof below preponderance of the evidence? I.e., by which, in order to prove there was harassment, Mr. Tamburino's client had to prove by a preponderance of the evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay.
So it wasn't clear and convincing.
This is a civil case. This is preponderance of the evidence.
So you believe that burden wasn't met?
Your Honor, I believe that the burden was not met. That the burden was not met to showing that objectively unreasonable contact took place on the part of Francesco Parisi during the time he was being assaulted. And with that, I'd like to respectfully request that you affirm the holding of the lower court, and I'll cede the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Braun. Mr. Tamburino, we'll turn to you for the last word.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a few things. First, counsel is wrong. It's not that the statute does not, when he said the statute doesn't say assault. Actually, the statute does say assault, even in Referee Reed's findings, page 2, paragraph 10. Under Minnesota statutes, the statute that I listed before, 609.748, a single incident of physical or sexual assault, doesn't say abuse, it says assault. And the reason why that is a criminal assault is we have to read statutes in their plain language. And this statute says assault, physical assault, sexual assault, stalking, non-consensual dissemination of private sexual images. There's nothing in this statute that says, well, by the way, when it gets to assault, we mean some type of civil assault. That's not correct. The HRO is about physical assault. And Ms. Jacobson was physically assaulted in this case twice. Second, Your Honor, as we cited in the Burem case, which is one of the cases we cited from 1986, which reversed a restraining order on the basis of not enough evidence in a domestic abuse situation. That's very similar to this, because that was a case tried in 1985, the hearing was in 85, and it was about domestic abuse, where domestic abuse had occurred in the past, in 1983 and 84. And the trial court basically found, well, there's enough here. When it got to this court said, look, this is a very troubling case. There was domestic assault in this relationship, but in 1985, we find nothing in the record to support that. We find some allegations, but we find nothing else in the record to support that. So they reversed the trial court. This court did. And that's the same here, because it is abundantly clear that Mr. Parisi grabbed our client's breast, squeezed it, cupping, whatever you want to call it, but he actually did that. That's not part of self-defense. Also, Your Honor, Judge Connolly, you have asked a number of questions about could Mr. Parisi, the respondent, have stopped? Yes, he could have. And I would analogize that to, as we all know in many civil cases, of mitigating your damages, which is when all of a sudden you're filming somebody like Mr. Parisi was, and he got what he needed within the first 30 seconds, because as we stated at the hearing, our client was intoxicated. She behaved inappropriately. And I think it even came out in the hearing that she apologized the next day. She sent a card to Mr. Parisi the next day apologizing. However, that does not negate the assault that was on her. So it's basically like a mitigation of damages. He could easily have said, after he got his first 20 seconds of her calling him bad names, I got enough, I'm gonna go either back home to the front desk, call the police, whatever it is, but he didn't do that. He kept antagonizing her by walking around and filming her and mocking her. As you saw in the videos, when she says in her drunken state, mind you, absolutely, you rape women, he goes, yeah, I rape women. And he keeps following her. And then that's when she grabs the phone. Counsel has stated that Ms. Jacobson hit Mr. Parisi in the face. There was no evidence of that. The videos don't show that. She was grabbing the phone. I believe Mr. Parisi's testimony was the phone was getting close to his face. But there was absolutely no testimony that she kicked, hit, punched, scraped, slapped. No testimony whatsoever on that. And in terms of the court's findings, Judge Connolly, as you stated, this is a preponderance of the evidence case. This is not clear and convincing. It's a matter of more likely than not. It's our lowest burden of proof that we have in our system. All you need for that is basically credible evidence and some support of that. And I would point out that Ms. Jacobson's testimony was pretty much unimpeached, as opposed to Mr. Parisi's testimony, which was severely impeached, going from pages 36 to 40, where I was cross-examining him, where he continued to deny that it was his hand. And in fact, finally, on page 40, he admits it was his hand. I had to take a break in that hearing and have the court review and have Mr. Parisi review the video again. He was arguing with me the whole time, and then finally at the end he said, yes, it was my hand. In fact, he even made an argument during the hearing between pages 36 and 40 that it was somebody else's hand, somebody who came into the fray to try to separate the parties. There was no evidence of that. That goes to his credibility. It was glaring that there were problems with that. We did have our burden of proof, and we surpassed it, and the court made clearly erroneous findings. So we ask that the court reverse the trial court. Thank you, Your Honor.
The court thanks both counsel for their helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement, and a decision will be issued within 90 days. Thank you.
Thank you.